Hi, this is Dave with a production note for episode 25. Due to technical reasons, we are unable to use the NYC half of our recording, but all is not lost. We still have the Skype version of Sarah to listen to. So enjoy the episode, but just know that the New York audio is not as crisp as it usually is.
Congratulations, ladies. In the Interior Illusions Lounge. Charisma, uniqueness, nerve, and talent. Category is duct tape. Gentlemen, start your engines. And may the best woman win.
Maroon!
Silence. Bring back my girls. Aja! Serving Desert Storm.
You got she-mail.
The time has come. Read your lip sync. For your life. Don't f*** it up. Shantae, you stay.
Executive realness.
Sashay away.
Extravaganza.
If you can't love yourself, how in the hell you gonna love somebody else? Can I get an amen up in here? Huh? All right, let the music play.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 25, for the week of March 24th, 2014. I am Salacious Bum David T. Cole, and I'm here with wannabe Arthur Sarah D. Bunting.
Shut up, bros.
Regina Dentata, Tara Ariano.
Queen City of the Plains, honey.
And Will of Fortune, Trip Payne.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Extra Hot Great. Welcome back, Trip Payne, and welcome back, Sarah D. Bundy, who had a week off last week. Thanks, Time Warner.
Thanks, everybody.
Before we get into our lead topic, which is RuPaul's Drag Race, eye hunting weapons.
It is, because I prepared for Cosmos, a space-time odyssey.
Basically the same show. involves hidden mysteries of our universe.
True.
And giant stars.
Somebody please explain to me the rules, if any, of, because I'm still not clear, and I had this whole Twitter thing about it last week when this topic came up. Explain drag name rules, if any, or the thinking or styling behind them.
Well, if you can make it a dirty pun, that's always a plus.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The first name should be a female name most of the time. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's not. RuPaul's name is actually RuPaul Charles. Mm-hmm. Chad Michaels' name really is Chad Michaels.
Yep. Willem is Willem.
Willem is Willem. So some performers, particularly those who are more into redefining gender roles,
right,
do that sort of thing.
So but, it's less. It doesn't have hard and fast rules, excuse my pun, like a porn name.
Right.
No. Okay. Because when I asked, people were talking about, well, this is whole thing with your drag mother, and it sounded like we're getting into like vampire territory where you have to take the name of the one who sires you or something.
That's kind of a thing.
There is that. Alyssa Edwards is in the family of Edwards, I think, and there's the whole McMichaels family and so forth. So you sort of take a last name sometimes.
Okay. So it's a rich tapestry.
It is.
It
okay.
is.
All right. That's totally fair. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't. Tapestry. I felt like in the quest for an orderly universe, mm-hmm, I felt like I was missing something in a drag name
right
generation. That,
I mean, the puns are part of it often too, but
so,
it's not required.
I feel like mine wasn't great then.
Would be a great drag king name.
what was that, Sarah?
I think that if you're looking for a drag king name, Rich Tapestry would be it.
Oh, that's pretty good.
And now you know what to wear also.
All right, so let's grade mine then. Knowing, I feel like mine's not great now.
Well,
so mine's Salacious Bum, which is a Star Wars thing.
Mm-hmm.
Salacious Crumb is that little lizard monkey that sits on Jabba's tail, mm-hmm, in Return of the Jedi.
You're looking at me, but I just want, for the record, I did know that.
Oh, I know. I'm just mm-hmm, the way things are.
Yeah.
It's not great.
Salacious on its own almost sounds like a drag name, but for some reason, I think the bum drags it down. That's not very feminine sounding.
Right, exactly. All right. Very good. RuPaul's Drag Race. Here we are in season 6. Let's get into it, shall we?
Yes.
I think this is a really talented group of queens.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps the most talent we've seen in a single season yet, except for All-Stars. And, you know, we're still kind of in the culling out stage right now. We've gotten rid of, as of this taping, four people, and it's mostly cannon fodder at this point. Mm-hmm. But there's not a whole lot of that left. I think we're going to have a really good race in the last half of this season.
Let's talk about the twist that started the season, which was the two camps of queens. Did we think this worked or not?
I thought it worked really well.
Yeah.
You know, we got to... I learned who all the queens were much faster this way.
That is a definite plus. Sarah, what did you think of it?
Yeah, I thought that it was a good way to get more queens into the season right up front, but without having that sort of, like, survivoritis where it's a month and a half before you even know that you're like, what's a Jenna?
Right.
Like, you don't, exactly. You don't know who one is because you don't have to care that much.
Yep.
So I thought that was a really smart thing to do, and also it added a little bit of sort of extra drama that they could go back to if they wanted to in terms of having the two camps, like, mm-hmm. if they were going to ally amongst themselves, that they could go to that for drama. But this show doesn't really need to do that, because one of the things I like about the show is that even though it, you know, everything is very manufactured and contrived, first of all, that's the point. Second of all, they're very proud of how they build these contrivances and how thorough they are about it. And third, all the sort of roommate crap that you sometimes have in shows like this, like roommate conflict, like that's actually the workplace conflict also. Right. So it's built into what they do as their job. So it feels less like people are cast just to make trouble, because they are, and yet they aren't.
Right.
If that makes any sense. Like the fakeness is the realness. I don't know if I'm explaining that.
Well, yes. Sure. I mean, things like throwing shade are part of the whole drag universe. So when they are insulting each other in the workroom, it doesn't feel like it's off the point.
Right. Mm-hmm. There's a roasty kind of energy to it that's usually done. It doesn't feel mean-spirited. It's mean.
Not usually.
But it's usually not malicious, I guess, is maybe a better way
to put it. Well, the benefit of RuPaul's Drag Race is it's basically a talent show.
Yes.
And that is one of the talents that you need to make it in the biz.
Absolutely. Right?
And that's why it sort of has a leg up on a lot of other on a lot of other shows of that ilk. Like, I was trying to figure out what, like, the nearest analog is to sort of, like, you have a set of skills. So it's sort of like, I feel like the closest format-wise is, like, Apprentice?
I would say Top Model, but sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's basically the same competition.
Yeah, I know, you're right.
Format.
Right. And that they need those skills to survive and thrive in the business gives it, at once it's very fake and very put on, but it works within its universe because you need to do that. So I think it benefits. It's the rare exception to the Dave T. Cole rule of reality shows, where the fakeness actually uniquely works.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the question of what are the skills of a drag queen is part of the whole drama of the show. You have the people who think, oh, you just need to go out there and be pretty and pose. The ones who think that you need talent or need to do comedy, and they have their own camps and... it's interesting watching all those people debate what you really need as a drag queen.
Yeah. And it was fun to see that debate played out as a Broadway musical.
Oh, God. That's one of the best challenges ever. I loved that.
That was really fun.
Not quite as good as the ballet from last season, but right up there.
Oh, yeah. The
ballet. It was really involved.
It was.
Like, for something that just came and went in one episode, it felt like something that could have been, you know, prep and execution and spread over two episodes. So it was kind of nice to see it all happen in 1 hour.
Yeah, that's another thing I like about the show is that there's not fat on it.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, you know, our esteemed colleague Mark Blankenship, who covers the show for the site, does it as a watch skip, which was my suggestion. And in retrospect, I think that was probably not a great call, because he likes to watch everything. And there really isn't much that's skippable, although I am one of those people who, if there's just a ton of stuff on the DVR and I've been away on vacation, sometimes I will watch Untucked only, because then you get all the shade throwing and you basically know what happened. Does anyone else do this, or is this blasphemy?
For me, the Untucked is the one part that is sort of skippable.
I don't watch it.
I don't skip it, but I feel like I could.
I don't. I've never seen it. I don't watch it.
I can see using it as a recap if you need to, though. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That was where I've had it officially was born. My girl, Detoxicant, who... Now and then, that is another thing I use to make myself happy when I'm in a bad mood. A, no knack music. Revisiting the GIF, boo, that David T. Cole made for me last year.
Oh, yeah, right.
Well, on TV, please go search for Detoxicunt, and she will be there with her earrings flapping, having had it officially forever.
Does anybody think about on the show that, you know, because it's a talent show, you know, roughly, that I kind of wonder sometimes why reality shows always have to have eliminations as the thing. Like if it's a talent,
there has to be a winner.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe like, I always kind of feel like, I mean, I guess by the middle of the season, you're going to have people that are just obviously not up to snuff, mm-hmm. but I kind of feel like sometimes they just like, I would like to see like maybe the four strongest go, you know, the distance towards the end or something. Like, I don't know, something about the elimination thing that just seems like it's assumed that that's the way it needs to work. But I don't know if that is the case. One
good thing about eliminations is it gives you a whole lot of different varieties of challenges that you can use. You know, you couldn't do the Snatch Game challenge with four queens or with 14 queens. You really right. need like 6 to 10.
Yeah.
You know, and that sort of thing.
That's true. Yeah, because I mean, I guess where it comes in is that you could have somebody who is extremely talented in 9 out of 10 things, but the first challenge happens to be the one they suck at and they get eliminated. But really, overall, they were probably the best or could have been the best. Not that, you know, all is fair in reality television, but sometimes I kind of get a feeling that people go too soon in the grand universal cosmos, a space-time odyssey way of things.
And I did think this season, Kelly Mantle went first, and I kind of got the impression that she was probably the most talented queen to go first so far.
I would agree with that.
I would like to have seen her go a few more episodes.
But it's a very tough field this year.
It really is.
I think that there have been a couple of queens in the finals in the last couple of seasons. I'm thinking of Fifi and what was her
Roxy.
Name? Well, Roxy, yes. That bastard. That on top of being shady and like not that great at being shady, they just like pulled a lot of bitch face and weren't likable. But I think that's why they were left in, so that we would have something to root against.
Right, I agree.
In the end. And I think someone theorized about this on our forums on Previously TV as well. And I, you know, I don't mind that so much. Like, I did enjoy hating on Fifi and Roxy. So, well done, RuPaul and producers. But sometimes it doesn't make sense that those queens will stay in. And I also sometimes feel like I'm not, that we're not necessarily seeing what the judges see during the lip sync. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the one area where sometimes I'm like, can you explain a little why you chose who you did? I mean, I guess we don't have to know every single thing, but that's the one area where I feel like I don't really know what the decisions are being.
And why is lip sync the tiebreaker and always the tiebreaker? Is it really a big thing?
If you go to see a drag show in a club, you're going to be seeing lip syncing. That is the meat and potatoes of what they do.
Okay. All right. I figured. I thought that.
Yeah. Meat and potatoes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't forget about your two veg.
The twig and berries. Is
I would say that Gia Gunn is already maybe champing for the Fifi edit this year.
Maybe, but I don't think she's going to make it. I think it's going to be Bianca in that slot.
Interesting.
And Bianca, unlike Fifi and Roxy, actually has more inherent talent.
Yes.
But I think she'll be the one that, if the editing wants a villain in the end, I think that's the one where they're going to do it.
I guess I'm thinking of Gia as more the one, like, in the Fifi mold of being, like, the dumb one that no one could root for.
I can't see her making the final three, though.
I guess. I mean, she impressed me in the Broadway challenge, though. Yeah. She did better than I expected.
And I'll give that.
In the episode that you didn't see, Dave, the week before, the one that we watched, they had the challenge was... they had to do horror movie parodies. And so she made some observation because one was like Drag Me to Hell and the other was like Psycho, right?
Yeah. It was supposedly a remake of the same movie, but
right.
set in the 80s.
Yeah, yeah, okay. So they asked, so she said something about like, I don't know why theirs was in black and white. And the producer, for once, maybe the only time that's ever happened on the show, you hear the producer ask, well, don't you think that that's because that was supposed to be in the 60s? And Gia pauses for like... 15 seconds and then goes, no.
She is really dumb.
She really
is. Really dumb.
But very pretty. but not as pretty as Courtney Act. Oh, my pick to win. God.
She's in my pick to make the final three for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She's gorgeous.
She really is, and very, very talented.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've got the final three as
being... spot for Danny Noriega. I don't know why.
You do? Really?
Mm-hmm. He's kind of... He's not great. She's adore. She's sort of not great, and her makeup is not smooth. Like, she's still sort of early in her process, but... Yeah. I don't know. She has an energy that I like. And whoever played the head on the plate, Darian Lake?
Yes.
God. The tooth gnashing. And then when they would say cut and her face would sort of go slack and she would roll her eyes. Oh, my gosh. Like, she was riveting and she was just a head on a plate. Like, damn, why didn't I pick you in the pool?
She's really good.
She had great makeup on that one.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of people who are not great... There's a little tweak that I would make to RuPaul.
I'm making a bet with myself what you're going to say. Go ahead.
Nope, but why don't you just guess? Because you obviously already know.
Get rid of Santino.
Yes.
He has nothing to add. It's true. I mean, Michelle Visage is not my favorite, but at least she actually gives on point critiques that make sense. Which is funny considering she had double armpit vaginas in the last episode and it was really tough to look at. I'm sorry, there's no other way to say it. Things were pushed up where they should not have been pushed up. But Santino never says anything constructive or like very insightful.
He really comes from this very, very narrow viewpoint of I'm judging everything as if it were an outfit on Project Runway.
Yeah.
And it's like, no.
That's not what this is though. Yeah.
And he reserves the harshest criticism for stuff that looks like, whatever, stuff that should have gotten him eliminated, like that thing that looked like the model's vagina had rabies. There was an outfit exactly like that, like, two seasons ago, and he's like, that's horrible, where'd you get the idea for that? And the queen's like, really, girl?
Yeah.
Yeah, and he only seems to go for, like, the really girly gowns and so forth. Like, he doesn't seem to appreciate, like, the milk outfits, which I love.
Yes.
Or that he's like, that fabric looks cheap. Like, it is cheap.
Right.
Like, they had 21 minutes to sew this. Like, what show do you think you're on? He just get the joy. Like, Visage I used to hate, and she totally grew on me.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's like, she loves it.
Yeah.
And she takes the judging seriously, but not herself. And since, you know, it's the way around.
Yes. Boo.
So, shall we do the picks for who's going to be, you know, in the final and who's going to win?
Yeah, I mean, I regret to say I don't know everybody's names well enough yet, but I think Milk is going to definitely make it to the final three just for you know, to be in the Raja Sharon Needles like weirdo slot.
Right.
And I agree with you about Bianca. I think Bianca is a goer, but I have to say Courtney Act to win. Trip.
Yeah. I think Milk is going to go really far and could make the final three, but my actual three, I have Courtney Act and Bianca, and the one I'm picking to win is Ben de la Creme.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think so. I think he will eventually show that he can do glamour, he can do comedy, he's talented.
Yep.
I think he's a protege of Jinx Monsoon.
Okay.
I can see it happening.
Sarah?
I think it is a Ben de la Creme, Courtney Act, and Bianca final. Sorry. And I think that Adore Delano will get pretty far.
Yeah, you can't have an ex-American Idol person come through your casting and not put them on the show. They must have just been dying when that happened.
He gives good eye roll. Like, I think he has a story, and I think that they also like to have, up to a certain point in the season anyway, the younger queens, so they can have that dialogue about learning and putting the time in and stuff like that. But we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
If you come up, if they keep doing singing challenges, he's good.
Yeah.
Party.
Dave?
One last question before we head out. Well, first of all, we'll check back at the end of the season, see how right everybody was.
Yes.
And whoever is most correct, I'm going to tell you right now, I promise you, one Dave point.
Woo!
Yay!
No, I just had a question about pronouns, because Trip, you were saying and sometimes you say she. Is there a rhyme or reason to it, or is it just...
I'm not sure, but I think I tend to use he out of drag and she in drag, but it depends. I don't really know.
I was just curious.
Mm-hmm.
I know that RuPaul likes to say, you can call me he, or you can call me she, or you can call me Regis and Kathy Lee, so...
That's good advice.
Yes.
Okay, it's time to go around the dial, and our first stop is with Tara.
So I put this in the doc. Sarah has stopped watching Scandal, so she was like, what does this mean? Oh, no! So she was referring to what I put in the doc as quuck, meaning an assignation between Quinn and Huck on Scandal.
Q-U-U-C-K.
I don't know how else you could spell it.
No, it's just a great... It's if nobody has that domain yet, that sounds like a kind of domain that could be like the next big thing. It would either be like a successor to Yahoo or like some sort of new Bitcoin internet currency.
Yep.
Like, you know, give me five B's to a like, quack, they used to say.
Totally.
So what happened is Huck breaks into Quinn's apartment again and threatens to kill her again, then doesn't kill her again. Yeah. But the difference is this time... he's got her up against the wall and she's yelling at him and then he kisses her and she kisses him back and it's not what anyone wants to see. I feel like everyone in the audience had to be like, no, kill her. Killing her is what you're supposed to be doing. They are not appealing separately or together. They could frankly both be off that show and it would be a better show.
I would actually put Huck off that show first. He is so terrible in one note and...
Mm-hmm.
And doesn't seem to have... He's terrible, one note, but also for a guy that's supposed to be so brutal, never really has the courage of his convictions when it comes to
Know, but now it seems like that we're supposed to think the reason that he hasn't been able to literally pull the trigger with Quinn this whole time is because he loves her.
Yeah, and that's horseshit.
Which is horseshit. Yeah. I mean, really, they should... The mistake they made was introducing Charlie, who's such a more enjoyable character to watch because he doesn't give a shit. Like, he's actually been trained properly and just wants to, like, do mayhem.
Yeah.
That's what that show should be.
He also wants to do her. Like, in what universe does this show think it's operating? Like, of all the things that are not credible about the show, like, we will accept that everybody running for president has literal blood on their hands.
Yes.
Fine.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't also ask me to accept that everyone thinks that Quinn is the shit and wants to take a big whiff. No. Worst.
I mean, but I can buy him being into her more than Huck.
Yikes. Okay, so you got a sub one?
Oh, yeah. Well, we have to talk about The Good Wife.
Sure.
Because we'll...
hang on. Spoilers a ho, fun ahoy.
Don't forget to do the...
I won't. I got my finger on the end one.
he literally does have his finger on it. So Will, last night on The Good Wife, Will got shot and he was alive for a little bit and then he died. And people...
let me know when we're out of spoiler territory.
Well, okay, I will. So Sarah is very happy about this because she was over Will. Sarah.
I was over. Can we also have the fart drop? Because the fart noise is sort of how I felt about Willisha, and I'd kind of been complaining about that for a while because initially I thought they had chemistry, but then it just kind of didn't work for me.
Mm-hmm.
I liked the adversarial place that they were
at. I did too. Yeah.
But Will had become this increasingly like sour, vengeful guy that it's like I wasn't sure if the show realized where it was taking him and that he was becoming increasingly like unlikable and except for Alicia and you know Carrie to a certain extent wanting to beat his ass on cases how are we supposed to relate to this guy and then on top of that he has this information that he may or may not share with Bogosian LLC about the votes and everything and it was like how are they going to get out of this because the you know, he was, whatever, disbarred for 6 months or whatever it was. Like, are they going to go back to that? I had no idea this was going to happen, and I'm not sure we need bother with the spoiler thing because CBS/the internet managed to spoil everyone on it, like, 3 hours after it happened. But I think it's good. I think the King's explanation of why they did it is not great, that they're like, death is an innovative solution to these character problems when an actor wants off a show. And it's like, not really.
Nobody saw that one before.
Well, that's the thing that they're like...
I got killed off on a CBS. Really?
Yeah, we want to really dig into the irredeemability of death. Like, it's a topic that's been covered on TV a lot.
We all remember Matlock.
What? Yeah. But also, like, I mean, I do think it's true that this gives them more dramatic potential than other solutions to writing Josh Charles out of the show would have. you know, like, yeah. I mean, I said this on my post about it, but like, if all of a sudden Will was like, oh, I've been getting these headaches lately, we all would have known like where this was, where it was going. Like, there had to be an element of surprise to it.
And if you just write them out, you know, as, you know, I'm going back to my home planet for a while.
Yeah.
That would have been nice.
The flame is always there between those two, and
which
you have to extinguish that
post.
Flame.
Yes,
otherwise,
you
don't have any ending in the game for the next pair up.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So I'm okay with it. It was a bit much how they actually did it, but at the same time, it's like
very Law and Order ish.
It was it was very like the once in a blue moon ER episodes, like the one where Carter and what's her face got stabbed. You know, like
God, that I still remember. I still have that frame where they're staring at each other
under the bed.
Yeah,
it's freaky. This episode of The Good Wife was not as good as that episode. No, that was a great one.
If the only thing they needed to do to make this a true Law and Order exit was for him to die on the courtroom steps instead
of course.
In the courtroom.
Because yes.
That's the Dick Wolf signature.
Yeah. It was because he was a lesbian.
Yeah.
It was.
All right. There we go.
Good Wife spoilers. Now we're at an end.
And we're moving on to Trip?
Yes. Hey. It's important that we have these musical cues.
I agree. Well, if you have any gay friends at all on your Facebook or Twitter feeds, you are already aware of this fact. Netflix has announced a new comedy called Grace and Frankie, starring Lily freaking Tomlin and Jane freaking Fonda as longtime rivals whose husbands fall in love with each other and plan to get married. I know so many people who have flipped out just upon this very announcement, and everybody is saying the exact same thing, which is they have to get Dolly Parton on in a guest shot for the full 9-to-5 trifecta.
Yes.
So, yes, this is pretty much the definition of trip bait for
this
show.
Nice.
Yeah, trip nip. Yes, trip nip. Exactly.
Okay, I'm not a crackpot. But I feel that Law & Order SVU's sergeant, acting sergeant, whatever the hell, acting commander, Olivia Benson, has become increasingly and irremediably unlikable over the last season or season and a half. She has no sense of humor. She's always on the point of crying, way over-identifying with victims, like, way beyond whatever she did before. Yes,
which was already at, like, 90%, so now it's at, like, 150.
Yeah, it's not good. They also, someone needs to have a word with the makeup department. The cigar store Indian rouge, not, whatever, cigar store Native American, excuse me. Like, we all have high def. Go easy.
Yeah.
Okay to be in your 40s. You still look great. Calm down. You need to beat that face better is what I'm saying. But it's interesting that this is happening to this character because we've seen it before, and I call it the Hathaway.
Mm-hmm.
And like a beloved character sort of, it's like the writers start believing their own press about this character. She becomes increasingly sanctimonious, unlikable, humorless, you know, everyone on the show loves her and never questions what she's doing, but for the viewer, she's becoming increasingly just a pill. This is happening to Benson. It's unfortunate. Kind of hoping she leaves the show. I think the show is, you know, completely over the top and awesome in that way.
Yeah.
Doesn't necessarily need her. I think it can survive people leaving. I didn't think it actually could survive Chris Maloney leaving, but once it did, I was like, okay, this can just go on forever and become increasingly hilarious.
But what if she leaves and he comes back? That's the real secret sauce. That would be amazing.
And what if it goes on for so long that Law & Order SVU turns into Century City?
I'm into it.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Is that it?
Yep.
And lastly, Firefly is the subject of our second Previously TV Forum Great Rewatch. It starts, I believe, tomorrow, as of when this podcast launches, Wednesday, I believe. We're going to knock out 2 episodes a week, so that means we're going 6 weeks plus the movie. 6 weeks? 7 weeks, I guess, in total.
Sure.
And so check it out in the Firefly section of the forums. I will be rewatching and slash watching for most of it, because I think I've watched about half of them.
Yeah.
The show also is batting 500 in the Extra Hot Great canon. We've had one episode inducted and one episode denied.
Right.
So I'm interested to see where it goes. I'm working on a special treat for next week's kind of report. We'll do a little report each week on the podcast on the episodes we watched. So stay tuned next week. Knock on wood, a special treat. All right, everybody. It is time for the canon, and Trip Payne has brought us something. Take it away, Trip.
Padding, stacking up his pieces of papers in a very official manner.
That's right. Well, since we were talking about RuPaul's Drag Race earlier, I decided that for my canon submission, I wanted to discuss one of the single most important television episodes of all time.
Wow.
I know, right? Y'all should be honored. Anyway, that was not a joke or an exaggeration.
What episode of the A-Team are we?
The gayest episode of the A-Team.
This episode of the A-Team revolutionized how gays and lesbians are seen on television. I'm not going to let you people drag me down.
Okay.
And, so to speak. And I will make it through this. Without this episode, we might never have seen Will and Grace, or Glee, or Modern Family, or RuPaul's Drag Race, or dozens of other shows. This episode was also a huge moment in the modern gay civil rights movement, and I think that a lot of the progress we're seeing right now, in a world where almost half of this country has marriage equality, and where the vast majority of young people are pro-gay, can be traced back to conversations that this episode started. Of course, I can only be talking about Ellen, Season 4, Episode 22/23, April 30th, 1997, The Puppy Episode. And before I talk about the episode itself, I would like to take a minute just to put it into a little context to explain why it's so important. 25 years ago, in 1989, 30-something had a scene where they showed two men in bed together. They weren't having sex, they were just having a discussion after sex, covers pulled all the way up to their chests, and the religious right had an absolute fit, and advertisers bolted, and the episode was pulled out of the syndicated run. It was kind of a disaster for them. 20 years ago, 1994, Matt Fielding, the token gay on Melrose Place who never got any action, was finally, after several years, supposed to kiss another guy, but conservatives and advertisers howled, and at the moment of the kiss, the camera pulled away from the kiss and didn't show it to viewers, which was parodied on Will and Grace several years later. On the first season of Friends, Susan and Carol's lesbian wedding was shown, but the brides did not kiss.
Season two,
I'm sorry. So in 1997, when this episode of Ellen aired, there was almost no gay representation on television at all, and when you did see it, it was usually comic relief or some sort of victim, either of violence or of AIDS. On this episode of Ellen I'm about to talk about, the network prefaced the episode with a parental advisory warning. And looking ahead for a minute, Laura Dern, who plays Ellen's love interest in this episode, says that she did not work for a year and a half after this episode aired due to Hollywood backlash for playing a lesbian character. The series itself ended after one more season because people thought it became too gay-oriented, which I thought then and still think is ridiculous. The last season was actually the most interesting season, and I think has gotten a bad rap. But anyway, when word got out that this episode was going to happen, it was a really big damn deal. There were endless articles about it. Ellen came out herself on Oprah 2 months before the episode aired, and then again on the cover of Time magazine. Gays all over the country were praying that this episode would be done right, and that they would finally get to see themselves reflected normally on television. So there was a lot riding on it. And you can hear that in the audience reactions on the episode. There's like a few little mini coming out moments before the big one, and every time one of those happens, the audience goes out of their minds. And you can tell they're not just cheering the scene or the occasion, you can tell how really personally invested they are in all of it. So honestly, even if this were not a particularly funny episode, I would argue that it deserves canonization simply for its cultural importance. However, in my opinion, the episode is, in fact, really funny. I watched it earlier this week for the first time since 1997, and was impressed how well it held up, how true to life it still felt, and how many laughs I got out of it. It won an Emmy for comedy writing, and it deserved it. So now, after that endless lead up, I'll talk about the episode.
I have a quick question before I get into it.
Yes.
Speaking of lead up, was there any hints in the episodes before this, or was this sort of like the transition all happened in this episode?
Nice segue into my next sentence.
All right.
Episodes leading up to this one, Ellen had been putting little clues and teasers about what was coming, and she starts out this episode the same sort of way. She's in her bedroom closet, picking out something to wear for her date with Richard, and her friends are waiting for her, and yelling this.
I thought she's been in there forever.
Ellen, are you coming out or not?
Yeah, Ellen, quit jerking us around and come out already!
What is the big deal? I've got a whole hour.
So,
Wah-wah.
Yeah, exactly. There had been a lot of that in the preceding episode, so...
Jokes about whether Ellen was Lebanese and so forth.
Yeah, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So the episode begins. She's on the dinner date with Richard, and his producer, Susan, comes in, played by a gorgeous-looking Laura Dern, who introduces herself with this speech that sounds exactly like something that Ellen would have said.
Hi, sorry to interrupt. Or, well, am I interrupting? It looks like you've finished dinner, so I guess I'm not interrupting. But actually, we're still talking, so technically I am interrupting. But now I'm talking so long that I should have just originally interrupted. Nice sweater. Thank you. Who are you?
So, yeah, not a particularly funny joke, but it just impressed me, like, how much that sounds exactly like Ellen's dialogue, so you can kind of see why they hit it off. But Laura joins the two for dinner, and she and Ellen clearly do hit it off. And the three of them go back to the hotel, where Richard and Susan have separate rooms, and Ellen goes in with Richard. He hits on her, and she feels uncomfortable for some weird, unexplainable reason, and flees. She runs into Susan in the hall, who invites her into her room, and the conversation eventually reveals that Susan is gay and had thought that Ellen was as well. Ellen's body language in this whole scene is fantastic, and she has a lot of good lines. But Laura Dern has probably the line from the episode that has gotten the most traction over the years.
You know, I think I know what's going on. Is it's not enough for you to be gay. You know, you've got to recruit others, you know.
Hey, I'll have to call National Headquarters and tell them I lost you.
Damn, just one more and I would have gotten that toaster oven.
Yeah, the toaster oven line has definitely survived, but... anyway, Ellen flees the scene and goes back to Richard's room wanting to prove herself by having sex with him. In a later scene, she gives her friends a hysterically detailed account of the, quote, man-woman sex that they had. And then we go to a scene with her and her therapist, played by Oprah. Ellen is very twitchy and nervous and defensive, and it feels very real as she leads up to one of those mini coming out moments I mentioned earlier.
You know what I hate? I'll tell you what I hate. I hate when people make assumptions about you, you know? I mean, especially when that you is me. It's not like I haven't had boyfriends, you know, just because I don't happen to have a boyfriend right now. You know, it's just I'm choosy. What's wrong with me? If I wasn't choosy, I'd be Mrs. Larry Gladstone, wife of my eighth grade boyfriend.
There is nothing wrong with being choosy, Ellen.
Right, exactly. And it's not like I'm looking for perfection, you know? I just want somebody special, somebody, you know, that I click with.
And obviously you didn't click with Richard. Has there ever been anyone you felt you clicked with? And what was his name?
Susan.
So, later in the episode, Ellen hears that Richard and Susan are getting on a plane, so she rushes to the airport to tell Susan how she feels, and this is it. This is the big scene that every gay man and lesbian in the country had been waiting for. And the tension in this scene is electric. This is a very long clip. This is over a minute and a half. But I feel it's the key to the episode. So I want you to hear the audience's reaction to this scene. And I wish you could see the grins on Ellen DeGeneres and Laura Dern's faces when they're doing this scene. Because you can really see their actual emotions coming through. And I have to admit, I still got choked up when I saw this scene.
Please, please, please let me just talk. Just... Okay. You know how... you know, you said in the room, you know, that you thought maybe I was, you know, I said, no. Well, I was thinking about it, you know, and I think that maybe I'm, I guess what I'm trying to say is I did get the joke about the toaster oven.
So are you saying what I think you're trying to say?
What do you think I'm trying to say?
Oh, I'm not going to say it again and be wrong.
No, you're not wrong. You're right. This is so hard, but I think I've realized that I am. I can't even say the word. Why can't I say the word? I mean, why can't I just say? I mean, what is wrong? That why do I have to be so ashamed? I mean, why can't I just say the truth? I mean, be who I am. I'm 35 years old. I'm so afraid to tell people. I mean, I just, Susan, I'm gay. Great. That felt so great. And it felt so loud.
So the second half of the episode begins with a fantastic, but unfortunately very hard to clip, dream sequence with Ellen in a grocery store, where a wide array of guest stars play grocery employees who sort of bizarrely focus on her sexuality, the high point perhaps being Katie Lang directing Ellen into the 10 lesbians or less lane. Ellen asks therapist Oprah if this means anything, and in a long and really true-to-life and well-acted scene, we see Ellen coming to grips with what her life is going to be like now. And although there's a lot of jokes in this scene, it's a scene that pretty much every gay person just coming out can identify with.
I don't know, I guess I thought if I just ignored it, you know, it would just go away and I could just live a normal life.
And what is a normal life, Ellen?
I don't know. Normal. I mean, just same thing everybody wants. I want a house with a picket fence, you know, a dog, a cat, Sunday barbecues, someone to love, someone who loves me, someone I can build a life with. I just want to be happy.
And you think you can't have these things with a woman?
Well, society has a pretty big problem with it, you know? I mean, there are a lot of people out there who think people like me are sick. Oh, God, why did I ever rent Personal Best?
You can't blame this on the media, Ellen.
So there's a lot more, but basically, Ellen has a coming out party where she tells her friends, and they're all supportive. She gets her heart broken when Susan tells her that she's already in an 8-year relationship. She goes into a lesbian coffee house for the first time. She sort of touches on all of the immediately after coming out moments that everybody has for the first time. And they're all good scenes, and there's a lot of jokes and so forth, but the main thing is that it feels very real. You can see, like, her clear discomfort as a newly out gay person. And it's something that gay viewers really could connect with. The episode ends with one last gag, bring it full circle, as Susan brings Ellen to meet Melissa Etheridge to sign some forms.
Here she is.
Okay, Miss Morgan, I have just one question for you. Are you gay?
Yes, I am.
And sign right there. And initial here. And initial here.
Oh.
And sign here.
Wow, I didn't know it was so complicated.
Oh, congratulations. Susan.
That was a toaster oven. The audio was unclear. Yeah.
So ending on a slightly hacky joke, but it was funny. So I have to admit, I almost feel a little guilty asking you guys to vote on this one. I feel a little bit like Ellen's joke at this year's Oscars, where she said that voters faced two possible outcomes: either 12 Years a Slave was Best Picture, or they're all racist. So I kind of feel like I'm inadvertently putting you in that position here. But I will say that this episode meant a lot to me as a 29-year-old gay man at the time. Yeah. And today, as a 30-year-old gay man, I think that it is still a very funny, very powerful, and singularly influential TV episode. One of the greatest of all time, and I firmly believe it deserves to be part of the canon.
Oh, thanks, Trip. You know, I was thinking, as you were actually making this argument, how rare it is to actually be witness to history and know it. And this is 94, you said?
97.
So in the 17 years since this has aired, you know, like, how much has happened. I mean, this was a landmark episode, but just think of everything that's happened since and all the things that still need to happen, obviously. But, you know, I was thinking a couple of years ago, me and Tara, when we were still in New York, we were part of this thing called Pop-Up Chapel, which is when New York State finally legalized gay marriage. Our friends Josh and Bex had this idea where they would, in Central Park, provide the stage, the officiants, the photographers, the flowers, the blah, 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 everything for first day gay weddings. And I was a photographer and Tara helped with administration and wrangling and all that. And even at the time, I was thinking, this is like neat and it's a good celebration, but it's also really stupid. You know what I mean? Like even then it was such a obvious human right. You know, and never mind, I mean, there's a lot of celebrations to be had and people were very happy and I was all in for that and that's why we helped. But I was also like 19, whatever it was, 2012.
It was 2011, I think.
Yeah, 2011. So it's really interesting to hear your take on this show, having lived in informative years as this was airing. And obviously it was different for me. I think the first time I ever even knew about this was years after. Like it wasn't on my radar at the time. But, you know, when you say, like, okay, you're either going to vote this in or you're a terrible person. That was actually my first note. So either I'm going to vote this in or I'm a terrible person.
It's not either or, really.
Well, we all know I'm a terrible person, but hear me out. But for me, like, if you took out the equation of this as a moment in the civil rights timeline, you know, like, here's television's contribution to everything that was happening at the time. The, you know, attitude slowly but surely changing, you know, the tide of history going to where it should be. If you take that out, like this episode, I would have a lot of problems with. I think like it is definitely hacky at parts. I feel like Laura Dern's character starts on one note, abandons it immediately and turns into another character. The whole thing at the start where she is Ellen's mirror character is never again brought up. She is very in control for the rest of the episode in a way is never really explained, that sort of stuff. It has very sort of sitcom-y moments that place it in that transition zone between the hacky shit of the 80s and sort of the, you know, the stuff we had in the aughts, you know, where your Arrested Developments and stuff sort of came up. It's a transition show in regards to its structure, into its jokes. But one point that I totally kind of passed over that really kind of made your argument for me is how into it the studio audience was.
Yeah.
And for me, like just like as a, I don't want to say I didn't have anything at stake in it, but you know what I mean? Like it didn't speak to me in the same way it spoke to
it's
you.
It's not for you the way that Dad's is for you.
But you're totally right. I mean, you could hear it in the way they're doing it. And once you're attuned to that reaction, you totally get that this was a really big moment, that it was a broadcast of the winds of change kind of moment, right? And it's like, it finally happened. We had some misstarts, but, you know, now a new discussion can begin. So, given that I feel like the episode on its own is okay. I some of the jokes are okay. The toaster thing was cute. But it's really this episode's moment in history and, you know, a testament to everybody that was involved that made it happen. Not only Ellen, but actually finally somebody in network saying, oh, okay. Like this, the time has finally happened. We should be doing this. I say it's definitely Ken worthy. Even though I think, you know, as an episode of TV, you know, B-.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what you're saying, and especially when you got to the part about the reaction of the studio, how electric it is.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
That it must have been, I mean, I can't imagine how emotional it would have been to actually
I wish I could have been there.
Yeah, and it sort of is like, in terms of putting it in the canon, I won't repeat a lot of what you said because I agree with you, but in terms of putting it in the canon, it's sort of like, I feel like the episode qualifies because this episode is like the reason that the show exists. You know what I mean? Like, even though it took them four seasons to come to this point and it sort of fizzled out after that for a variety of political reasons, right. Like, you could make the argument that the reason that there was this show is so that this moment could happen, yeah. So that it could be the launching pad for, you know, Ellen's whole life to change and for everything else to change with it. Even though, you know, you mentioned that Laura Dern didn't work for a year and a half after this, which I didn't know, but obviously Ellen herself didn't work for years and years, much longer than a year and a half, before, you know, Rosie O'Donnell made it safe for lesbians to have mom dance parties during the day and pave the way for the rest of Ellen's career. Anyway, yeah, I think in terms of the jokes, it was not super great. Although I have to give a shout out to David Anthony Higgins because I thought every single one of his lines landed like a motherfucker. He plays Joe, one of her friends that works in the bookstore and is the brother of Steve Higgins, aka Higbones of the Jimmy Fallon talk show, who I also adore.
Also, yeah, speaking of the 10 lesbians or less was a really good joke.
Yeah.
I like that whole dream sequence.
Yeah, the dream sequence was very cute.
Is that Dwight Yoakam I saw?
Yes, yeah. And Billy Bob Thornton.
My first note was like, what the fuck is he doing?
Well, I assume because once they had Billy Bob Thornton in it because of all the Sling Blade jokes earlier, that then he was like, bring my bro, and they were like, okay.
Boy, is that a time capsule, eh? Sling Blade jokes?
And Jerry Maguire jokes, too. Yeah, that's 1997 in a nutshell. But yes, I understand why you picked it. And even though the episode is not perfect, it is certainly important. Sarah.
I think given how much weight it was carrying, and you know me, like sitcom-y sitcoms mm-hmm. like this are like Bunting Kryptonite. You know I don't care for that stuff. Mm-hmm. But given the weight that it was like could have been staggering under, I thought it did a good job. I thought it was pretty well paced. There was some sitcom-y stuff in there. But it's all sort of canceled out by something that Tripp mentioned, which is not sort of Susan and the character Ellen looking at each other, but Ellen saying that she's gay into the microphone and then her and Laura Dern kind of looking at each other and Laura Dern just smiling at her like, how you feeling?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I never watched the show except for this episode. But I watched it at the time that it aired, and just sort of that feeling of like, finally, my friends and family have some place to be on TV where it's not fucking Melrose Matt hugging the guy who's on Chicago PD. Like, they're really long hugs, and he's looking really intense over his shoulder, but like, these are people I know, and they don't just hug, and this is kind of bullshit. And this was a really big deal culturally, and I remember feeling just really proud of Ellen and that whole team, and also thinking that I would obviously love to make out with Laura Dern.
Who wouldn't?
I mean,
that was like perfect casting. And I have one other note, which is like a total random sidebar, but Tara and I were just talking today about, I think no one else is watching Lindsay on OWN. We both are. And like Oprah basically goes and tells Lindsay, like, stop being late and canceling shoots. Like, you're better than this. I mean, Lindsay kind of isn't, but Oprah knows exactly how to talk to her. So we were just talking about this today, and then just having seen this episode where Oprah is playing a therapist and is really perfectly cast. I don't know. It's kind of interesting. But like, that is definitely the soothing spirit board voice you want in that situation.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd forgotten what energy this episode had in terms of, like, just relief and joy and feeling proud of someone for becoming who they were when it was really difficult to do. So, yeah, excellent submission, excellent argument, excellent perspective on history, and I would love to vote if everyone else is ready.
Let's do mm-hmm. it, Sarah.
Yes.
Tara?
Yes. A homophobe.
I also vote yes, and I think it's worth saying that it's an important episode that isn't too capital S special.
Yes.
Yes, mm-hmm. It is. It still has lots of goofiness to it.
And that's why it doesn't, it's a little stale, but it's not super stale. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, it endures because it wasn't trying special hard.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
No.
Okay, Ellen, the puppy episode, season 4, episode 22 and 23. You are hereby inducted into the extra hot great canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time for Winner and Loser of the Week. And who has our winner?
Sarah.
I have the winner. It's the bridge because Franca Potente has taken a role on the show for next season. This is somewhat stale as news items go, but I'm pretty excited about it. I sort of stopped watching the U.S. version of the bridge because it wasn't quite different enough or better enough. Like, I had just finished watching the original and I was like, this isn't quite as good and I don't care. But Franca Potente was super amazing on American Horror Story season 2.
Mm-hmm.
I wished that that character and that arc had gone on longer. I mean, they lobotomized her and it really couldn't. Spoiler. But she, I think, is really underrated and fun to watch, and she's fun to interview. Actually, she has a lot of really good thoughts about acting, and I like watching her work, so I'm going to get back into the bridge because of her, and I think it'll really be an interesting direction for the show to take.
I feel like the bridge, they set up a different direction for their second season that's going to fork off like what the original script was doing. Mm-hmm. So I'm interested. I was disappointed in the first season of FX The Bridge, but
we should just say a sidebar. Dave and I have now watched two seasons of Brone, the original, yep, and all of season one of The Bridge
and
The Tunnel, which is the French-British one.
Yeah.
And I think we like The Tunnel the best. I did anyway.
Oh, no, I like the original.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I liked The Tunnel the best.
The Tunnel is definitely better than the U.S. one. But
The Tunnel has the best lady cop. She's of the three, she's the best one, I think. It's Clémence Poésy from Variety of Things.
Yeah. And Loser of the Week?
Loser of the Week is White Collar. Oh, it's white, winding down. It's it will have one last 6-episode season, and then that will be it for the show that is not Suits on USA. It's the other one. So that Matt Bomer can go and be on a bigger screen, which there's nothing wrong with that, I feel.
Can we call that boming it up? Because I feel like that's something that's...
Yes, he's the boom.
He's going to go boom it up.
He is.
Magic Mike 2.
Yes, definitely.
So here's an interesting question that you brought up, and that is, what time is it?
I have a theory. I have a theory.
Daytime?
Well, because I've been listening a long time and to this show.
Yeah.
And I've noticed the pattern here.
Okay.
And so I'm thinking it is game time. Oh, damn. I was so sure.
You were right all along.
Oh, thank God.
This is the fourth game time of the season. Last week was non-regulation due to Time Warner Cable's
dickery
at Sarah's
first
end.
Mm-hmm.
So the standings are still valued guests on top of the leaderboard with 2 points.
Woo-hoo.
Sarah in second place with 1 point. And Tara in the basement.
Looking to get on the board.
Looking to get on the board. Today we are playing We Are Legion.
Ba-ba-da-ba-ba-ba-ba.
That works.
Tara.
This comes from
I win.
This comes from Daniel Schrader.
Fair point.
Who had a mini topic last week. He's back with another game time and earns himself an extra credit, which is of course redeemable for another extra hot great mini of his choosing. In We Are Legion, I am going to give you the name given to a fan base of a TV show.
Okay.
And you're going to tell me the TV show which they represent.
Sure.
Many of these are self-evident.
Yep.
Many are very well known.
Okay.
So I suspect this game is going to be won and lost on the few that are a little tricky.
Okay.
Okay?
Yep.
Let's see who goes first.
We will start with Sarah.
All right. So Sarah, and then let's go to our guest Trip, and then to Tara. Are we ready to play We Are Legion?
Sure.
Hell yeah.
Okay, Sarah.
Yep.
Your fandom name is Hoosers. Hoosers.
Hoosers?
No, Hooers. Hoosers.
Hoosers?
Like Hoosiers.
Doctor Who.
Incorrect. Whose line
is
it anyway?
Wow, I had your answer.
That's what I would have said too.
Okay, number two for Mr. Payne. marshmallows.
Marshmallows?
Marshmallows. Not marshmallows, like I am wont to say. Mm-hmm. Marshmallows.
Would that be How I Met Your Mother?
Good guess. Is it Veronica Mars?
It is Veronica Mars.
Oh, okay.
Tara.
Yes.
Mouseketeers.
Mickey Mouse Club.
That's our first point of the game. Sarah.
Yep.
Gladiators.
Gladiators. Scandal.
Trip.
Quirk.
Trubies. Trubies.
True Blood.
Nice.
Tara.
Yep.
X-Files.
The X-Files.
Sarah.
Good job.
Yes.
Fannibals. Fannibals.
Fannibals.
Fannibals.
Hannibal.
Ah, of course.
Trip.
Not fans of Dave Hannibal?
Yes.
Human beings.
Oh, sure.
Human beings. Almost human?
Good guess.
Community.
Yeah, that show doesn't have fans. Come on.
It has two.
Well, that would be
room.
Why you haven't heard of the fans.
Yeah.
Tara.
Yes.
Let's see here. Da, 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 da. Wheel Watchers.
Wheel of Fortune.
Correct. Did I say there was 45? There are 45.
No. Okay.
Back to Sarah. Grifters.
Grifters. Grifters, grifters.
Fans of Sarah Palin's Alaska? Just kidding.
White collar.
Good guess. You need to have leverage, man animal. Leverage.
Oh, leverage, of course.
Can I just say Battlefield Earth? I have the most fun saying leverage and man animal. I don't remember anything
Every
from
time the promo came on, we were watching something on Hulu, I would think leverage from a man animal. Oh, God.
Okay, Mr. Payne.
Yes.
Irrelevance.
Relevance?
Irrelevance.
Irrelevance. Irrelevance?
Irrelevance.
Wow.
They are the fandom for what show?
I. Revolution.
Pardon me?
Revolution.
Incorrect. Person of interest.
Oh. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
So.
Tara?
Yep.
Misties.
Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Nice.
Here's another Battlefield Earth related one for Sarah. Psychos. Although I think it's Cyclos, isn't it?
I don't. Oh, in the movie, yes. Movie, yeah. Psychos, though, for Sarah.
Psychos for, yeah, Psychos.
Psychos?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, what is it? What? Nothing. Never mind. Crank call.
I'm really torn, but I'm going to guess Bates Motel.
Oh!
I buzzed you as right because you started to say psych, but you were saying psychos, and I thought you were answering.
That wasn't even my second guess. Boo. Oh. All right.
All right.
Bates Motel, though, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
No,
yes.
That works. But Gleeks, Mr. Payne.
Glee. Finally, I got one.
And bringing us into our first score break, I think this is right, Nonatons or Nonatons.
Oh, Call the Midwife.
Correct.
Nonata's house is where they live.
Oh, okay.
All right. Sarah and Trip are tied with 2. I have 5.
Okay. Sarah.
Yep.
Put on your thinking cap for Trekkies.
Star Trek.
What if it wasn't?
Mr. Payne. Scapers.
Farscape.
And, that was 17.
Oh.
Spread Eagle.
There we go.
Tara?
Yeah.
Babblers.
Babylon 5?
Wow.
Nice. Ew.
What else could it be?
I don't know. Sarah? Gateheads.
Gateheads?
Gateheads.
Gateheads. Roly-poly gateheads. Stargate SG-1?
Well, hubs. Thumb up. Correct. Stargate SG-1 was the correct answer. Okay. Oh, this is a good one. For a Trip.
Yes.
Woody's.
Yeah.
Let your imagination run wild.
I don't think it's RuPaul's Drag Race. Woody's. Wood. Everwood?
Oh, good guess.
Torchwood.
Torchwood.
Oh.
Damn.
All right, Tara.
Yeah.
Beasties.
Beasties. I don't know.
Beauty and
Tale
the Beast.
As old as time.
Oh, yeah. Beauty and the Beast, of course.
All right, for Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
For Sarah. You never get this. Smithies.
Smithies.
Yeah. If you get this, I have a crisp $100 bill for you.
Ooh, Smithies.
Think hard, Sarah.
Offer void in Tennessee. You're in Tennessee, right?
You know she's not.
Doctor Who.
Can I take a guess?
Yeah.
Alias Smith and Jones.
Nope.
Ah.
Sarah was closer. It is, in fact, the Sarah Jane Adventures.
Oh, that fucking thing that keeps coming up.
Yeah.
God damn it.
Game time poison.
God.
Okay, Trent. No. Whovians.
Wait, is it me? I thought it was...
No, it's you.
Yeah. Okay. Whovians, that's Doctor Who.
Correct. Tara.
Yep.
Sidekicks.
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 Fuck.
Heroes.
Oh.
Heroes.
Oh, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Back to Sarah D. Bunting in New York City with Room Friends. Fandom known as Room Friends. What show?
Room Friends?
Yeah, Room Friends. One word. Room Friends.
Room Friends. Friends.
New Girl.
Oh, okay.
That's something from New Girl.
I would have said Max Headroom.
Oh, that would be
good. No, that's
cool. Ooh, that's a good one.
Noopsies.
Noopsies?
Yeah.
Can you spell that?
Sure, I sure can. And I can also use it in a sentence.
Please do.
N-E-W-P-S-I-E-S. Your clue is noopsies.
Okay. The
If you don't know the show, you won't
fans
know.
Fans of the news. I don't
know. The first word was right. It was the... the OC.
The OC, because they're from Newport.
Never to voters.
Yep.
All right.
Stupid. Yes?
Power Force.
Power Force.
The Power Force is the fandom for what show?
Power Rangers? Mighty Morphin Power Rangers?
Okay, yeah, we'll give that to you.
Okay. All right.
Okay, Sarah. Coconuts. Coconuts go crazy for this show. Coconuts. 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 Everybody, coconuts.
Let her answer.
Coconuts.
Dr. Co.
Conan?
Conan, yep.
Oh, of course.
All right. Trip, another tough one for you.
Okay.
Colbert Nation.
I want to say The Daily Show, but I'll go with The Colbert Report.
Correct. And for Tara,
yes.
Bringing us into our second score break,
okay.
The 30th question
right.
is this.
Yes.
Oncers.
Once and again?
Once upon a time.
Oh, of course.
Man, you guys got to think.
Some As if once and again has a fan base beyond me.
Exactly.
All right. Sarah has 4. Trip has 5. I have 7.
Ooh.
All Still right. lots of so, game to go.
Yeah, everybody's got five questions left. And Sarah.
Yeah.
Oh, this is great. All right. For Sarah, Jagnix. Jagnix. And I want to say, Sarah, that this is for you.
Oh.
And, but wait, before you answer. Wait. Before you answer, this is a special question. You have to answer both the name of the show and then how the fandom approaches the show generally. For this
okay.
point.
Okay. Well, first, I would like to say, if I'm correct about what the show is, they're really missing an opportunity by not calling themselves Jagoffs.
Agreed. Yeah. Cosign.
But I believe the show is Jag. And I believe that they celebrate their show navally.
Correct. For 1 point, and I want to say, you earned yourself a Dave point there. Okay. For Mr. Payne, Brown Coats.
Oh. That really sounds familiar. It's one of those sci-fi things.
Yep.
We've had Doctor Who already, and I know he wears a coat. And
it's true.
Yeah, that's what I know about Doctor Who.
So many of our favorite sci-fi heroes and villains wear coats.
And the Star Trek people wear the tight uniforms, and I'm at a loss. Battlestar.
It's not that. It's not Dr. Coat. That would have been a good guess.
I would watch Dr. Coat.
It's in fact, the Brown Coats are from Firefly.
Oh,
from
Firefly. Yes. Yes, they are.
Okay, Tara.
Yep.
Bronies.
My Little Pony.
Yes, full title, please.
Little Pony.
Oh, you act like you don't know.
Yeah, Friendship is magic.
There you go. There it is.
We would have accepted My Little Pony, but, you know, let's put you on the hot seat is my thing.
All right.
Okay, for Sarah, Cortexifans.
Cortexifans. Wow, really?
Yep.
That's a pretty clever This is pretty clever. I like it. Fringe.
Fringe is correct. Xenonites.
That's X-E-N-A Knights, I'm guessing.
Yep.
So I'll say Xena Warrior Princess, not to confuse it with any of the other Xenas.
It's actually Knight Rider.
Yes.
The secret shopper, seriously.
Xena Friendship is Magic.
For time.
Yeah.
Yes.
Dunderheads.
The Office.
I feel God in this Chili's tonight. Sutors. Sutors, as in for the lady's hand, Sarah. Sutors.
You make it sound so sci-fi-ish. But since it's for the lady's hand, I'm going to say that it suits.
Correct. The one that is not white collar.
The aforementioned white collar.
All right. Sleepyheads.
Sleepyheads?
Sleepyheads.
There should be a title with sleep in it or something. Why am I not thinking of one? American Dream. Not that anybody remembers that show.
What is American Dream?
It was a fake American Bandstand drama set in the
60s. Or two ago.
Okay. That was, in fact, Sarah's favorite show of all time, Sleepy Hollow.
There is a sleep in it.
Sleepy Hollow.
Oh.
All right. Avatards for Tara.
Avatards?
Yes.
Avatards. I don't know. I have no idea.
Avatar, The Last Airbender.
Friendship is Magic.
Bracket, the TV show.
Got it.
Not the terrible, apparently, movie that came out.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Either of the movies called Avatar that are terrible.
For Sarah, Lostralians.
What? I mean, Lost, I guess, but that's just stupid.
It's really.
Agreed.
Really dumb.
Okay, thank you.
Let's see here. Wingnuts for Mr. Payne. Wingnuts.
Oh, you can't be serious.
Yes.
There cannot be a fan base for wings. Can there? Really?
No, can't. Oh. And let's all be happy for that. Well, that has wings in the name.
Oh, West Wing.
The West Wing, yeah.
Well, I'm actually happy to have been wrong.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. Tara.
Mm-hmm.
I lost my place. Dwarfers.
Red Dwarf?
Red Dwarf. They probably wore coats. Sarah?
Yep.
Your last question is Scoobies.
Scoobies. Scuba SG-1. Just kidding. It's Buffy.
And for Mr. Payne, Arrowheads. Ah.
Well, I see two possible answers depending how clever they're being.
I don't discount bottled water.
Oh, I always discount bottled water. I'll go obvious. I'll say Arrow. And not Archer.
Nice.
Ah, yes. And lastly, for Tara, Gremlins, which is a good name. Gremlins.
Gremlins or Gremlins?
Gremlins.
Gremlins. Grim?
Yes. And I just want to say at the end of this game that I think we need to start a consulting company that lets fandoms come to us. Here's the show we want. What should we call ourselves? Because some of these are real stinkers.
Australians, guys. Really.
Yeah, Australians.
All right, Tara, let's hear the scores.
Trip had 7, Sarah had 9, I had 11.
All right.
Hurrah.
Congratulations, Tara. Before we get into it, our shits and giggle round.
Oh.
Shout out if you know the answer.
Yep.
It will earn you 1 Dave point. What are those Dave points for? What's in the Dave point box?
Nothing.
Dave points,
nothing.
But we don't know what they're for. The fandom, known as Leapers.
Quantum Leap.
Nice.
Look at that. Bam. Quantum Leap
Very
is
nice.
Correct. Congratulations, valued guest. You got another Dave point. All right, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We dragged out a discussion of season 6 of RuPaul's Drag Race and went around the dial with stops as Scandal, The Good Wife, Grace and Frankie, Law and Order Special Victims Unit, and Firefly. Trip successfully pitched Ellen's puppy episode for the canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's fandom game time. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
rhymes with fun, honey,
Sarah D. Bunting,
all tea, all shade,
and Trip Payne,
sashaying away.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time, right here on Extra Hot Great. And in the meantime, we'll see you on the forums for the Great Firefly Rewatch.
I know it's a difficult mission, but you and I have to get it on.
I understand. We have no choice. Take me, sir. Take me hard.